The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. All the ways to take us in, whichever one you choose, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It is Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9. So much more than a producer, live from Bar Canada Air. The D was happening.
Not much, buddy. How you doing?
I'm good. We have an NBA champion. We're going to talk about that momentarily. We got to talk about MVP, too, man. I just – PSA coming. I'm just warning you. on the show today, Drew Dinsick, as always, on Tuesday. We'll talk about a smattering of sports with him. I don't know, the ramp up to the Olympics. Maybe we'll have some Olympics thoughts from Drew.
DraftKings posting stuff like swimming trials and everything.
Oh, he'll be all over that, I would assume. Drew will be here. Lou Finocchiaro, Gambaloo, Sweet Lou. Are they booing? No, they're chanting Lou.
This is his time of year, man.
This is his time of year from the Bout Business podcast. Bout Business. I like that. We'll talk hockey with him because we do have hockey still. Stanley Cup final tonight. Maybe Florida closes out Edmonton just like Boston did the Mavericks last night in a gentleman's sweep. We'll talk to Lou about that. And the College World Series. And then there were six in the College World Series. 4 SEC, 2 ACC.
I'm typing up the odds this morning. If anybody wants to jump on the Florida State bandwagon with me and Gil, you can get better odds or just as good odds pretty much.
Oh, mid-20s. Not as good as mine. I had 35-1. 35-1. But yes, will they have another elimination game today? If Florida State loses today, they're donezo. Gotta win 4 in a row when you lose 12-11 because a check swing. Never mind.
Garbage.
Then Paul Spohr a little later on. Before Paul, Rufus Peabody will be on the show. I've known Rufus for over a decade. Great dude. For those who are unfamiliar, I know a lot of Numbers Game listeners, of course, are familiar with Rufus, but for those who aren't, he wears a lot of hats. He is the half of the Massey Peabody Analytics team. He's half of the Bet the Process podcast with his buddy Jeff Ma. He, of course, is one of the co-founders, along with Captain Jack, of Unabated. But first and foremost, he is a sports bettor and always will be first and foremost a sports bettor. I don't know if it always will be in the future, but certainly always to this point in his life. And yesterday, not yesterday, the day before yesterday, pardon me, he had a situation where starting the day, if Bryson DeChambeau were to win the U.S. Open, which, spoiler alert, he ended up doing, by the way, Kelly, Rufus and his group would lose $500,000. Which, again, to you and me, sounds like a tremendous amount of money. To, you know, Rufus, big maher that he is, not quite as much. But not quite as big a deal, I should say. But still, the decision had to come down to, okay, bankroll protection. How did they manage that situation to protect or not to protect against that possible loss? And we'll get into it. We'll also juxtapose it against what happened 3 years ago when he came on the show, because Rufus is good about this. Rufus, by the way, will be coming to us from London. Remember 3 years ago, I mentioned this yesterday, I was trying to remember it off the top of my head, Mito Pereira in the PGA Championship. He actually had Mito Pereira. That was different, though, because he had Mito at long shot odds, and he did not hedge, as I recall. And Mito gacked it in the final hole of that 2021 PGA Championship, which Justin Thomas ended up winning in a playoff against Will Zalatoris. But we'll get into that with Rufus a little later on. And just general hedging for the mere mortals out there. What is his philosophy on hedging? The age-old hedging question. We'll get into that with Rufus later on the show. NBA, though. Congratulations, Boston Celtics. Congratulations, all bettors who had the Boston Celtics in whatever form, either just last night or to win the championship at different points in futures. The Celtics crush the Mavericks in Game 5. They do so by 18 for their 18th championship as a franchise, and that breaks the tie with the Los Angeles Lakers for the most titles in the history of the National Basketball Association. And in case you missed the game, here's your 30-second recap. It was 19-18 Boston, and that's the last time it was competitive. Because then the Celtics had a 9-0 run to close the quarter. They led by 10 at the end of the quarter, which at the time was their biggest lead. Second quarter, they went up 15. Mavericks had a mini run. But then to close the quarter, a 19-7 Boston run that ended on an emphatic Peyton Pritchard bang, as Mike Breen would call it, from behind half court at the buzzer. The Celtics led by 21 at the half. And for the entire second half, Kelly, the biggest lead was 26. The Mavericks never got it closer than 17. And that was just not a competitive display at all. Nor was this NBA Finals, quite frankly, with the exception, of course, of the blip of Game 4. And so congratulations to everybody on the Celtics. Sorry about your Mavericks futures ticket, but I would imagine you had long ago written that in the loss column.
Yep. Still a... playoffs weren't great betting overall, but some of those futures kind of helped balance things out. NBA season comes to an end. Was good betting regular season, so move on. Few week break before Summer League starts, Gil.
Summer League, baby.
This was, I can't, you know I love the NBA. I love betting the NBA. It was a boring finals. It was a boring playoffs overall.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was all horrible from a just a fan's perspective. The finals was the symbol of it all, right? Those finals might have been worse than everything in the end. The Mavericks just didn't put up a fight. Here's your PSA, though. And we'll have the NBA draft, obviously, before Summer League, too, Kelly, which I don't know what the betting breadth of that will be, quite frankly, what will be available to us. But
I got to cling and bet in.
You got to cling and bet. Yeah. You still think that's going to happen? Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, we'll see. Who knows? We don't know. Okay. Donovan Kling and Go number one, by the way, is what Kelly's referring to, which Zach Cohen has, JVT has, you have now. Okay, so Jason Tatum, this is just a PSA, a reminder to all, that betting on any kind of awards, as we have displayed on this show, and I'm sure network-wide, but certainly on this show with our near losses over the last year, and then there was last night, which is just, again, a reminder of what are we doing betting any of this stuff, particularly in the NBA. 11 votes for NBA Finals MVP. That's the first problem right there. There's only 11 votes.
Yeah.
First problem. 7 went to Jaylen Brown. 4 went to Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum, who led the Celtics the course of the finals in points, rebounds, assists, three-point percentage, free throw percentage. Jason Tatum, just to put it in historical perspective, is only the 6th player in the history of the NBA Finals to lead his championship team in points, rebounds, and assists. Did Jason Tatum win the MVP? No, he did not. I just want to shout out Nevada Gaming. Thank you for not putting up the odds here in Las Vegas, because you saved me on a Drew Holiday bet earlier, which I knew you would, and you saved me on a Jason Tatum bet yesterday. The way I figure now, Nevada Gaming owes me about $29,000. But that's another story. So anyway, here's the deal. So seven votes went to Jaylen Brown, 4 to Jason Tatum. When we were texting, you and me, and then I was also texting Felica and Will Hill, I was convinced, as were you, convinced that Jason Tatum was winning this. By the way, not just me, and we could have a reasonable debate if you thought Jaylen Brown should win it, okay, fine. But just know that the betting markets, the live betting markets, Jason Tatum got as high as minus 550 in the fourth quarter. Wasn't just me, right? It was the market. The market, right? It's still an awards thing. Market in quotes. But the point being that, again, 6th player in the history of the NBA Finals to lead in points, rebounds, and assists, and he didn't win it. And so because I wanted to name names, I went and actually looked at the names, and then what's the most recent thing that I obviously feel was more universal, that Victor Wembanyama did not win Defensive Player of the Year. And I just, for giggles, Kelly, wanted to see if there was any overlap in Gobert and Jaylen Brown voters. And what do you know?
Well, you only had, what, 7 possibilities?
6 of them, the 6 that were in both, all did that.
All Gobert?
All of them. Sam Amick from The Athletic. Tim Bontemps from ESPN. Tim Goodtime, by the way, if you're translating at home. Vince Goodwill at Yahoo Sports. Sean Powell at NBA.com. Simone Sandri at La Gazzetta dello Sport. That's Italian. And Jeff Zilgit at USA Today. They were all Rudy Gobert voters, and they were all Jaylen Brown voters. And my only point in all of this is, what are we doing voting on this stuff, guys? What are we doing? What are we doing? I'm thinking of the NBA. If you catch me betting on any award besides Wembanyama to win Defensive Player of the Year or perhaps a Wembanyama long shot MVP, you have the permission to crawl across this shield and slap me on the
neck.
Nice.
It's my turn.
Now
sweet.
It's your turn.
I like it. The man, it's tough. Like, I don't want to sit here, and you're not doing it either. I want to sit here and say Jaylen Brown doesn't deserve this, because it was tight. Like, yes, the shooting percentages, and he picked up a lot of Luka. But, man, I just – when I texted you, I didn't even know that, like, people had live odds up, so I didn't even see that until after the game. I think I saw Scott Seidenberg
put it up there, yep.
But when I texted you, I'm like, all right. Like, this is becoming overwhelming. He's finally having that big game. Like, Jaylen Brown's kind of taking a step back tonight. Like, this has got to swing to Tatum's side, right?
I would have had Drew, quite frankly, second behind Jason Tatum.
Wanted to bring that up. Drew Holiday finishes the NBA playoffs with a 50-40-95 split.
Yeah, is that good?
That's good. Like, I don't think we're going to do this anytime soon on this show, but you know, if I still had an NBA podcast, maybe. Greatest role players of all time. Like, Drew Holiday, if we're still calling him a role player, I mean, what he's done for a couple teams has been just amazing.
Only two players in the 2020s to win two championships, Drew Holiday and KCP. And both did so for two different teams.
Mm.
Yeah, that's the list. Congratulations, though, again, to the Boston Celtics. And we look at next year, the Celtics are installed. Because remember, Kelly, you cannot bet it unless it's installed.
Correct.
The Celtics are installed as the short shot at 5-1, is it? Plus 250, even shorter at DraftKings. The Nuggets, 8-1. The Thunder, plus 850. The T-Wolves, 9-1. And the Bucks, plus 950. Everybody starting with the Mavericks, double digits at 10-1 and longer. Celtics shouldn't be plus 250. No. The Nuggets would appear to be the best bet on the board for me at 8-1, or the Thunder at plus 850.
Now, you know me.
Or the T-Wolves. The
Nuggets caught my eye, but then there's that one other team in the Eastern Conference that's always.
And by the way, we put the Celtics in historical perspective. 80-21. Is it a great team? Absolutely. Is it as good as the Warriors teams or the Chicago Bulls teams? No. We went through that last week. Drew Dinsick's thought. I know he had the Celtics. Congratulations to him. That's next. Numbers Game. Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Next week, we're releasing our VSiN NFL Betting Guide. This guide is your ultimate resource for the football season, packed with detailed team, division, and conference analyses. And, of course, best bets for the upcoming NFL season. To get the guide, you must be a VSiN Pro subscriber right now. You can sign up for a VSiN Pro annual subscription for just $199. That's down from the regular price of $240. Plus, we're throwing in an extra month absolutely free. With a VSiN Pro subscription, you'll get exclusive access to premium analysis, expert picks, and advanced betting tools that'll give you the upper hand all year long. Do not miss your chance to sign up and save ahead of the NFL season. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe right now and use promo code ANG to claim your discount and bonus month.
Promo code ANG as in A Numbers Game.
It's VSiN.com/subscribe. Do that now. Use promo code ANG. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada at the D. I wanted to, just before we get to Drew, I wanted to mention, because I'm not hearing enough of one thing this morning when people are doing the retrospective on the Celtics. Their season, glorious season, 80-21 when you combine regular season and the playoffs. Again, we put it in context last week. The, you know, Brad Stevens deserves tons of credit. Obviously, Joe Mazzulla, wonderful for him. Ime Udoka, not so much. You kind of blew that.
I was thinking about that a lot last night. Does Ime have the Rockets out doing wind sprints this morning or something like that?
I mean, the Brad Stevens praise is absolutely justified, but I'm not hearing enough Danny Ainge this morning.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, and it's a collective all of those guys, right?
Danny Ainge, like, I just think it gets lost in the whole, you know, arc of it all. How unbelievable he was as a GM. And part of this championship goes, maybe most of it still, goes directly to him. First of all, the Celtics were terrible. He made the trade. Garnett from the T-Wolves, Ray Allen from the Sonics, they win a championship in 2008. All right, that one goes by the wayside. And then he makes the unbelievable trade with the Brooklyn Nets, where he sends Pierce and Garnett to the Brooklyn Nets, which were they the New Jersey Nets at the time? I can't even remember. But to the Nets, and that ends up being maybe one of the most lopsided trades, certainly in modern NBA history, but maybe in all of NBA history. He ends up getting first in 2014, 2016, and 2018. He ends up getting a pick swap in 2017. What did he do with those? 2016, the 2016 NBA draft, with the third pick in the draft, they end up grabbing Jaylen Brown, right?
The cojones to go, third overall and grab Jaylen Brown.
Third overall.
Much criticized for, 20-something percent from three at the time in college.
Third overall from Cal. By the way, who went number one and number two? that year. Ben Simmons went to Philadelphia, and Brandon Ingram went to the Lakers. 2017, the next year, they take that pick. They're at one. They trade it with the Sixers. So they swap first and third. The Sixers end up going Markelle Fultz at number one, right?
Oh, Sixers.
Lonzo Ball goes number two, and the Celtics get the player they always wanted at number three, and that was Jason Tatum.
Yep.
So there's that. And by the way, 2018, just to give you another how it extends to now, he ends up picking Robert Williams. Robert Williams ends up being part of the Jrue Holiday trade many years later. So, like, as much as Brad Stevens did, Danny Ainge just deserves just as much credit for all of this, if not more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the multiple head coaches, the multiple front office guys that all kind of put this all together in the different iterations of this team, right, that we saw. And it kind of took several years to build and replace some of the certain players and get everything all set. By the way, real quick, nobody's talking about this morning also. What was Porzingis doing on the court last night?
Oh, like, I have no idea.
I know he was still better than some other options, but, like, what were we doing last night?
I forgot to mention that. I was like, oh, he is playing. Why? I have no idea. Just in case, I suppose. But they could have waited till 6 and 7. Jrue Dinsick was all over the Celtics, and he's a big winner. I don't know if it was a windfall. We'll get his reaction now. But a golf clap for Jrue, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_Capper. And, of course, co-host of both the Deep Dive and Bet the Edge podcast at NBC Sports. Good morning, sir, and congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. That was a good one. And, you know, you can't really say windfall because the prices were never really that great.
Yeah.
Right? This isn't EGA 30-1 type of stuff.
No, it's not.
This is in fact, you know, I was kind of most of my equity was in Celtics East, and then ended up just matching with a bunch of people that wanted Mavericks in the finals. So I was laying the juice. So there was no windfall. It was mostly just, catastrophe. And actually, maybe it was a good thing because I tied up my bankroll, so I couldn't bet on the U.S. Open of Golf. So, it was ultimately a positive outcome. But no, the Celtics were, you can reflect on this historic run through this the playoffs in a couple of ways. Certainly the numbers and the record and the margin of victory and all that is all-time great, but their path was all-time soft. And the three losses that they had, the loss in the finals was pretty clearly just a, hey, let's mail it in and get it in game five. Their two losses in round one and round two were pretty inexcusable. Like, they probably should have not lost, considering how much better they were than every team they played. And honestly, you step back and you look at the quality of basketball overall in the entire NBA playoffs, it was horrible. You look at the quality of opponents that they faced, and I don't know that it's necessarily a surprise or a mystery as to what happened. I mean, all of the good players on so many of the teams were either dealing with meaningful injuries or out. They finish off the Heat without Jimmy Butler. They finish off the Pacers. Cavaliers without Donovan Mitchell. Yeah. And then they don't have to play the Knicks. They don't have to play the Sixers. They don't have to play the Bucks. They get the Pacers, and then they finish off the Pacers without Haliburton. And it's just like, wow. it may be exactly what they needed to finally realize, the talent and the advantage that they had, to kind of come through so cleanly. But, it was a weird playoffs in its entirety. I think I'm thankful that we had opportunities to get in on Celtics at advantage prices in the finals. Because people in general were a little bit mentally biased against this team, for lots of reasons, some of them good, some of them nonsense, but they tended to be clowns in all of their playoff runs prior to this championship endeavor. So, if you were doubting them until you saw it, well, now you've seen it.
Do you tend to make futures bets for the next season early? Do you wait? Does your brain, obviously with the Olympics in front of us, let alone football, your brain obviously will go to other things. You're a Tour de France guy. Yeah, I mean, you got all kinds of things you bet on. But do you make a basketball bet? Like, if you see the futures day, you're like, wow, Celtics plus 250. But wow, you can get the Nuggets, Thunder, Bucks. We were going through it earlier at like close to 10 to 1. Do you make a bet now?
Well, not on the Bucks. that team is fatally flawed. The NBA futures for me, I don't even really get serious at all until October because of the NFL for the most part. And this year in particular, you mentioned that there is so much going on with respect to, summer allocation of resources that I'm happy to sit on the sidelines and see this market materialize. Couple things to kind of keep an eye on. Certainly interested to see what the Celtics do with the big situation. Like, I have a very tough time thinking Al Horford is going to be as effective in season 18 as he was even this year, and they didn't have to ask him to do much this year because they got such a contribution from Kristaps Porzingis. It felt a little bit lucky that Porzingis was available to the degree that he was this year. And so I'd like to see kind of what their plan is in terms of fortifying the depth at the big in Boston. They're obviously going to be heavy favorites for me to win the Eastern Conference. I don't think there's really any move any other team can do that's going to shake my confidence that the Celtics, ought to be in the, pick 'em range to win the East next year. There are a lot of very, very good teams in the West, excited to see what Presti can do with as much draft capital as he has allocated. You know, he's got a war chest of just awesome draft capital for the future. He could go get a superstar to put on that team and help launch them to being clearly the best in the West. And the Nuggets are certainly, still very, very good. I have the best player in the NBA. So, there are a lot of interesting moving parts to keep an eye on in this offseason. I think ultimately it's probably going to come down to, picking the right horse in the West.
Yeah, and Porzingis, we just to be thorough, they didn't have Porzingis. That's built into the +250 for next year for sure. Were you involved in the finals MVP market? And whether you were or not, did you have any problem with Jaylen Brown winning it?
No, not really. I can, the counting stats and the kind of narrative around Tatum was obviously, it was going to be tough to overcome, but from eye test, I thought that Jaylen Brown was the best player that played in the finals in terms of just individual performance, and it's a finals specific award. I know that it was a coin flip for me, and I don't take exception to it. I would say that Tatum is not really getting or will ever really get credit for how important his defensive contributions are. The fact that he could defend the five in this series really unlocked the best of the Celtics defense, which was the differentiating factor in the finals and winning the title. So there is that. But ultimately, Tatum's shooting was so poor, I don't mind holding that against him.
All right. We'll come back with Drew. He's always kind enough to stay with us for 2 segments. Everything else he's betting on is on the other side. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This segment of A Numbers Game is brought to you by Zyn Nicotine Pouches, America's number one nicotine pouch that requires no timeouts or half times. Zyn is a smoke-free, spit-free, hassle-free nicotine pouch that can be enjoyed anywhere, anytime. What makes Zyn number one? It's available in a deep roster of varieties, including wintergreen, spearmint, and citrus. And you can choose between 2 strengths, 3 milligrams or 6 milligrams. Zyn is made with only 6 simple ingredients and is easy to use. Plus, it delivers up to 1 hour of nicotine satisfaction per pouch. Zyn is discreet, so you can enjoy them indoors or out. Never miss an at-bat or game-saving catch with Zyn. Find your Zyn at your local convenience store or online at Zyn.com. That's Zyn, Zyn.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
We just went for the dramatic pause there, Kelly, in case you were wondering.
That's right.
On
that
Ryan.
Works, yep.
Yeah, it's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Biddle, live from Bar Canada here at the D Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network, putting a bow on the NBA Finals, just again, historical perspective and what went down. First of all, historical perspective on MVP. Jaylen Brown, a pre-flop of the Finals, was +625 to cash as the NBA Finals MVP. Our old buddy Evan Abrams tweets out that 3 players have now won the Finals MVP in the last 20 years from outside the top 2 spots in those pre-flop odds. Jaylen Brown in this NBA Finals at +625. Andre Iguodala 9 years ago. Who could forget that? In the Warriors' first of 4 dynastic championships, he was 125-1. Andre Iguodala in 2015. And then Paul Pierce of the Celtics. D, Danny Ainge built back in 2008 was 5-1 heading into that NBA Finals. And you were saying the other things, the usurping of some of the prop bets last night for rebounds.
The series leader props, those swung pretty wildly last night. You had Tatum stole assists. He ends up being the assist leader.
From Luka.
And Luka went off, when we were talking about this before the finals, I think he was minus 500 or shorter is the best you were seeing, best number you were seeing Luka at. And then rebounds end up going to Luka. We talked about that.
Yeah.
I think on Friday, and it were or after game four or three, Lively had gotten up to like, I don't even know where he was at, but Luka was over 5-1 you could have gotten him at.
Yeah. I think Will
I lost
had,
my Tatum
I think head. Will had Lively. You lost your Tatum head?
Yeah, I had Tatum to lead the series in rebounds, so I was watching it a little bit. Real quick, I don't know if you guys caught this at all last night. NBA Finals end, though, always some weird things happen right when championships go on. And spotted in the Boston Celtics locker room last night, a former Boston Celtic, also former Dallas Maverick, Grant Williams just hanging out.
Just hanging out.
Awkward moment, bro. You got traded by both these teams.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? What
That's
are you even
funny.
Doing there?
I thought we know how it were. I thought you were going with that. The awkward moment when Mike Breen misidentified Drew Holiday's wife in the stands was a little
I didn't
more
catch
awkward.
That.
We have an error. We'd like to just correct it. It was not Drew Holiday's wife earlier. That kind of thing. Drew Dinsick rejoins us here, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, at @whale_capper, co-host of the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with Andy Molitor, Dinsick Classic, and, of course, also, NBC Sports Bet the Edge with Jay Croucher. Kelly and I, it's so funny. You were kind enough to – Kelly's on the basketball DMs, and I'm on the tennis ones. And, like, Jay is – let's put it this way. I show up every once in a while, and I'm like, I'll show myself out. It's a very tough crowd in some of those. But Jay is biting with his humor.
Great week for Jay. Peacock, U.S. Open coverage. Nailed it.
Oh,
and then
me?
All those Celtics tickets come
unbelievable.
Home.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I'm on my the old Roku last night. And, you know, on your homepage, they feed you stuff that, you know, they think you'd like. And one of them was U.S. Olympic swimming trials. And I thought to myself, self, I know one person who will be watching this. Drew Dinsick will. How'd that go down? More exciting than the finals, you said.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've had 3 days of trials. They do heats in the morning and then semis and finals in the primetime window. And the 3 days so far have been just everyone, you know, on the edge of your seat, excitement, entertainment. The big highlight on day one. In the semis of the women's 100 fly, you had Gretchen Walsh set a world record, kind of totally out of the blue. Like, not, we knew she was capable of that, but to do that in qualifying, in the semifinal stage was pretty shocking to see. So you can basically pencil in Gretchen Walsh as your gold medalist in the 100 women's 100 fly. The interesting part about it is the second place finisher went the third fastest ever in history in the women's 100 fly. The third place finisher was the fifth fastest ever. She will not be going to the Olympics. That's how crazy tough this is. You train for 4 years for an event. You get third. You're the fifth fastest in the history of the sport. You're out. No spot for you.
Wow. What event was that?
It was the women's 100 fly.
That was still the fly.
The drama of second versus third in this. In this qualifying is just insane because, you know, all three of our women go, we probably sweep. And, you know, it wasn't obvious to me, actually, that the third place woman wasn't our second best swimmer. But that's beside the point. She's going to make it, I think, in the 100 back anyway. So she will still get to realize her Olympic dream. But it was still incredibly amazing to watch. And then the woman I'm referring to, her name is Reagan Smith. She was an Olympian back in the Tokyo cycle as well. So she's got some hardware.
May I interject a question? Well, is there anything to the fact that 1, 2, 3 were among the three fastest times in the history of the fly? Anything to that?
It's just an anomaly, honestly. Like, they don't train together. They're all on different teams from all across the country. One UVA, one Arizona State, and one is, kind of in the Arlington, Virginia area. They just all happen to be amazing at the same time. And kind of another anomaly on the women's side in the 100 backstroke, you've had the top swimmer from Australia, Kaylee McKeon, who just set the world record recently. Has been going back and forth world records with Reagan Smith also in the women's 100 back. So they've been trading barbs from across the pond. And it's like this, the snake bitten nature of someone like Reagan Smith, where you're just like, imagine being like literally the second best of all time in the 100 back, the fifth best of all time in the 100 fly. And you might win no gold medals in France. Like you could literally be your all time great in two events. And you're not swimming one, and then the other one you could get beat by someone who's setting the world record. It's just mind-boggling. But
trading barbs, yeah. Meaning they're talking schmack. Is that what you mean?
No. I just mean they're setting you keep track of like if you're handicapping this, you keep track of like during this current cycle, like who has the fastest time in the world, right? Like that's the important number for kind of coming up with a projection. Not like what's your best ever, because if that happened 2-3 years ago, maybe you're well off form now, right? You want to know like this year, what's the fastest you've swum in that event,
right?
In competition. And they've gone back and forth like 3 or 4 times in 2024 in that event. And right now, Australia has the inside track on us. I will say, though, Reagan Smith gets one more shot at the 100 back tonight, where she could set the world record if she has a good swim. And Lucas Oil Stadium, for what it's worth, very cool place to have a swimming event. Not a great place to have backstroke, because there's really just nothing to help guide you in a straight line on the roof.
Oh, man.
It's all just chaos up there. And the backstrokers are all complaining about it.
Whoops. So I think Sorry to hit you.
We may have a handicapping angle here, right?
Yes.
If Reagan Smith comes in as the dog in the women's 100 back, but it's because of the Lucas Oil Stadium roof, you may get her at a dog price against Kaylee McKeon in Paris, and she could steal the show.
Okay. I was going to make a joke about the sight lines in the stadium and how it might affect swimmers, but apparently it actually is a thing.
So wait, so Gretchen Walsh, 100 fly, Reagan Smith perhaps in the backstroke. I'm just writing these down.
But, Drew, what's usually on the ceiling?
Well, usually it's just like beams, you know, like steel. It's usually just structural steel in a straight line in a grid. But the Lucas Oil Stadium is like it's got like cross hatching and stuff, and so it's been difficult for the backstrokers.
No one thought of this in advance. Well, that's amazing.
They tried to hang like a banner over there to try to ameliorate it, but I don't think it completely solved the problem.
Real quick before you go, Drew, that we're obviously grass season in tennis. Milos Raonic with 47 wow. aces, breaking the record for a best of three men's match yesterday, which is just, if you think about it, if you add up, you know, if you do the multiplication, what is it? Is it 48 points required to win a match? In a best of three, I'm trying to think. It's 4 times 12. So, 48. Yeah. So, obviously, he won other points different ways, and he didn't win them all that, you know, linearly. But 47 aces, incredible. Do you have any plays left today for folks?
Not left today, but I can tell you real quick, you know, if you haven't upgraded Milos Raonic, he should have your biggest delta of any grass player so far on the cycle. He looks very healthy right now. Most of his issues the last 2 years were health related, and he looks completely fine. 70 winners against Scam Norrie in London. And by the way, if you're not watching London, like talk about a very cool visual scene. Like goodness gracious, this is just a cool place to watch a tournament. I would say it's my favorite like to watch of the non-majors, just because of the setting there. The other players to upgrade, Berrettini obviously has looked great. He lost to Jack Draper, who deserves a healthy upgrade as well, of course, playing on home soil in London later on today against Devoni. I think men's Wimbledon is going to have some great players.
Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it. Coming back with football next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Bar Canada at the D. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. Still to come on the show, Lou Finocchiaro to talk both NHL, Stanley Cup final, Game 5 tonight between the Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers, and Rufus Peabody to talk about his U.S. Open betting experience, part of a gambling group, and stood to lose $500,000 if Bryson DeChambeau were to win the United States Open that morning, how they handled it, how they decided to protect against that, what the inner dialogue was, what his philosophy is in general on hedging. That's all coming up in hour number two.
He had a Rory bet, or he had a no on Bryson?
Yeah, so they had positions on multiple golfers, always do. And then part of the way to protect the $500,000 possible loss was to bet on Bryson. But to bet on Bryson there, you had to lay a lot, obviously, because he had a 3-stroke lead heading into the final round. This is the part of this discussion that's going to be interesting, is because Rufus has everything by model, and he is super confident in his projections to a point, not, you know, overly confident. So for him, it's a very precise mathematical calculation. For guys like Fezzik, by the way, Fezzik just texted it. He says, bet the Guardians to win the AL Central. He said -130. That's his. I don't know if Fezzik knows this, but we've been on the Guardians for a couple months here on the show. But he said -130 on the Guardians to win the division. But but Fezzik is a very mathematical guy too. And so, but Rufus is running models. So for him, it's a confidence based on his numbers that he has a tremendous amount of confidence in. Obviously, he's got a fair, you know, he's got his fair price, but he's got what the Betfair market is. He's got what a sportsbook market is. So going back and forth with his brother, and we'll get into this with Rufus, because his brother is now part of his group, and his brother has not been doing this for nearly as long as he has. And so I'm curious how this is different for him versus how it used to be for him when he was doing it with a much more veteran group, right, of his buddy, Big Zach, Little Zach, Train, all those guys. Then he was the guy who was, you know, he was still the guy running the numbers while they put in the bets, but I think he was more deferential then to them. And so now he's sort of the leader, and it makes sense. I'm curious if having your brother in the group also sort of inhabits your brain when you make these decisions.
Yeah, probably does.
Because if it's your brother saying, yeah, I don't really want to lose that amount of money, you know, they still end up losing no matter what on DeChambeau. We'll find out, right, how much they lost in the end on him. They've had a great run, but it's interesting because even for Rufus, I wonder if human emotions gets in the thought process of it. And now that's Rufus. If it were somebody else, mere mortals, who are deciding a much different kind of hedge, what is the general philosophy? Can you apply a general philosophy? Because most people don't have numbers so precise to back up their conviction, right?
Yeah.
So, you know... And there's all kinds of different things. Like when I had, going back to the 2020, because Drew just referenced it, and we talked about it earlier with Iga and the French Open. Okay, I know I'm supposed to, like, put some money on Sofia Kenin here in the finals, even though I know it's the stupid bet. But I guess just emotionally, in the off chance she wins, I don't want to lose money on this. So, okay, I'll put down a couple dollars on Sofia Kenin, right? There's all kinds of things like that. And so it's not a universal thing. But we'll get to Rufus. It's a fascinating story.
And golf, I think it gets even – golf is some of the most complicated because you're dealing
multiples.
Yeah, you're dealing with longer odds. You know, we were talking about this a lot off the air yesterday, but it just also depends how often you bet golf. Like, I think if it's a – you know, you might be used to 20-to-1s all the time if you're betting golf often, but maybe, yeah, I mean, I know Rufus is, obviously, but if you're out there and it's just, you know, a kind of one-off major bet for you, then you might approach it differently. The other thing I'm interested to hear from him on is, you know, the options, you know, to hedge. Okay, different before the final round. Yes, you could have gotten better odds live, but for him, I'm guessing you also can't get down nearly as much money live.
Not as much as you want to.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Though he was able to get down some. Like,
okay.
I was impressed with how much he could get down.
Okay, that's interesting.
And then there's the notion of, can you replenish your account as efficiently? Certain accounts can be replenished more efficiently than others.
Sure,
can.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's also like a consideration in all of it. So it's never that clean, you know?
It's not, yeah.
And when Fezzik was chiming in on yesterday, and I think this was, you know, Samich was on, I think this was the miscommunication, which is sort of like, I'm not disputing your math. Like, Fezzik goes immediately into Kelly Criterion and this always a good and all that. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, for me, there's Rufus on one end of the spectrum, backed by numbers, and then there's, again, this cottage industry of gambling Twitter, which I don't know if they think they're being smart about it, or if they like to sound smart, or whatever, it's like immediately they go to a hedge as a default, right? We have some guys, we often have folks who will tweet us and will be like, okay, you know, I can win $200 on this bet I made, but I can lock in $20. Seriously.
I mean, right? The cash out questions we get are, yeah, it's incredible.
But, you know, and my response is always, does $20, if $20 means enough to you, then sure, I guess you should. But, like, does it really? Because if it doesn't, well, why'd you make the bet in the first place?
Yeah. I always borrow your line. It's the what's changed. What's changed since you bet it?
What's changed?
Why'd you bet it in the first place?
I have Heather Watson in this tennis match at plus 180.
I mean, I didn't hedge heavily, but I hedged Mavericks a little bit, but I had that exact 40-1. And yes, like what changed is the Celtics I thought were a little mispriced heading into that series. So that's why I did it there. But golf's another, it's a whole other animal.
I have Heather Watson in this tennis match. She was up 5-2 in the third set, plus 180.
And where are we at now, Gil?
Match point, Buzkova. It's just right on the doorstep. And the mental thing happens, and you can't close it out. We'll see if it's going to be over here momentarily.
Any early insights from grass for heading into, you know, Wimbledon or anything that you've been kind of noting?
Yeah. So earlier I came on here and I said, okay, is this going to be the only tournament where I don't have an IGA ticket preflop? And I said, maybe. I've sort of decided that will not be the case, that I will, because Iga's whole thing is she came out, and J-Rod was great. He sent me something about this. She staves off the first match point.
Staves,
you know,
off.
Iga says.
I thought you could only stave off elimination.
What's that?
I thought you could only stave off elimination.
No, it's an elimination in its own right, match point. Iga came out and said, she's like, you know what? It doesn't take me anything to reacclimate to clay. And she's right, right? Like, she when the Clay Tour, remember that first tournament she didn't win and everybody lost their mind. I'm like, yeah, she's a week behind because she's playing Billie Jean Cup. But within one, you know, two tournaments, she was already the best clay player in the world. She never lost again. So I get it, and she's emphatic about this. So I don't know. Let's talk about Wimbledon and the Olympics together. I don't know what price, another match point, I don't know what price you would have to give me for Iga for me not to bet her to win the Olympics part of things.
Gotcha.
And by the way, Aryna Sabalenka already is withdrawn. Ann Jabeur is withdrawn. Not that Jabeur was a problem in clay in the Olympics, but there's a bunch of players that are going to withdraw both on the men's and the women's side for the reason that they don't want to transition back to clay from grass.
Can we seize on that for just a second? Like,
yeah.
This isn't that the ultimate example of, like, I mean, and these are sports we love, me and you, like, I mean, golf, tennis. If that stuff's coming into play, like, this shouldn't, like, I don't even know if it should be a sport in the Olympics.
Yeah, but.
I mean, like, you're avoiding the Olympics.
The Olympics doesn't care. They don't care. They're like, we're doing our thing. They're the IOC. They could care less about anything.
I don't know if the Olympics don't care, but, like, NBC doesn't care.
But to your point, absolutely. And by the way, Watson lost. Just brutality. I don't know that there's a price I wouldn't lay on Iga to win the Olympics women's side. And on the Wimbledon side of things, she probably should not be the short shot, right? She's never won a grass tournament before. But might we get a number that absolutely, and might we get a number that right now, when we see the numbers, I think it's too, she's too level with the Rybakinas and the Sabalenkas of the world. Like, it's not a great price for her. But what Drew said on the men's side needs to be reiterated, not only on Milos Raonic, but also on a guy like Matteo Berrettini. Some of these serve bot kind of players, good God. Like, it doesn't even become a tennis match anymore, right?
Right.
If Milos Raonic is acing you 47 times, that's less tennis than it is a throwback to the John Isner days of, I'm just going to serve bot you to death and see what you can, see if we can actually have points. So that's a player to look out for. Raonic and Berrettini, see what their prices are and consider that. By the way, I did make, though, because on a faraway place, while I could never bet NBA MVP, and we can't bet Conn Smythe here either, there is a faraway place that did offer Conn Smythe yesterday.
Oh, I like this, yeah.
I texted you. I bet Bobrovsky yesterday, literally with a 3-1 lead after he had a terrible game 4, at plus 131 yesterday. I do not buy at all that he's not winning the Conn Smythe they win tonight.
And what did he swing from, like minus 250 to that?
I couldn't believe it. I was like, plus 131. Give me that. So I am on Bobrovsky tonight for Conn Smythe. We'll come back. Sweet Lou Fittacaro on Stanley Cup Final and College World Series next.